Okay. Last week, we basically finished with the other religions. The term other religions is not really the right term to use. We finished with the religions. Judaism is not a religion. We'll see soon. Judaism is not a religion. Judaism is the story of the world itself. But we finish with the religions. We will get back to them just briefly as we go along in order to, again, bring clearly out the contrast in the way the other faiths developed and the Jewish faith developed. But right now we're going to move on to continue the discussion between the king of Khuzar and the Jewish Chaver, that we're calling him, the Chaver. So the king of Khuzar asked the Chaver to present the Jewish faith. And he told him, we believe in the God who took us out of Mitzrayim with great wonders, and who supported us in the Midbar, sustained us in the Midbar, granted us the land of Canaan, also with wonders, splitting of the Yarden, stopping of the sun, and who continued to instruct us through thousands of Nevi'im in the subsequent years. And the king of Khuzar responded unimpressed. He said, it's a lousy way to present the faith. That's the greatness of your God? That he's been taking care of you for the last couple of thousand years? You should say, we believe in the God who created the entire universe, who controls all of existence and beyond. Why are you telling me about, I believe in the God who gave me breakfast this morning. Or, I believe in the God who took me out of Egypt. That's certainly a smaller element of his greatness. Why are you presenting it that way? And here we begin the Chaver's response again. And here I'm already going to say that up till now was fun. Here we're getting into what we're going to be approaching a much more fundamental part of these discussions. I just have to daven for siyata d'shmaya to manage to convey these things right. But first, the Chaver responds and he says as follows: Zesha toimer he had datsa ekeshis. Says you are saying that I should present our faith, or anyone presenting a faith should present his faith as belief in the God who created the world. If that's what faith is built on, discovering the God who created the world, that is speculation. Nobody was there. Now, it's true that a person should be able to deduce that God created the world, but to go ahead and build a religion based on that must be based on speculation, because then, again, you weren't there when he created the world. If your entire religion is based on discovering the God who created the world and developing a faith, a religion, based on that, it's going to be based basically on your own deductions, which is what Avraham Avinu did. That's fine. And you would be expected to do so if you had nothing else. But at the end of the day, he says, it's always going to be questionable. You'll never be able to come and say, well, I deduced that a God must have created the world, and it must be that this is what he wants, and this is what he wants, and this is what he wants, and to be able to lay down a detailed religion. Remember, the Khuzari is not just interested in knowing where it all originated. He wants to know at the end of the day, what does it require of me? Right? That was his big thing here. There's actions that are required. What are they? If you're going to say this based on your study of the God who created the world, it's going to have to be based on speculation. No matter what conclusions you're going to reach, it will always be questionable. Because think about it, that's what the philosophers were busy doing. The philosophers, they also realized that the world must have been created by a greater power. It was before mankind reached a level of stupidity that they can claim that it all happened by accident. But if you ask the philosophers, who all agree that the world was created by a greater power, First of all, you can't get any unanimous conclusions. Each great mind among the philosophers reached a different conclusion, which is naturally how it's going to be. Human minds work differently, and great human minds work differently. I know you great minds think alike, but that's in a limited way. Minds work differently. Everybody has their limits. There will always be a case where one person thought of something you didn't. And therefore, if you want to go develop a whole value system of what's right and what's wrong and what we should be doing based on your discovery of the master of the world, there's not going to be anything unanimous. No two philosophers agree on the exact details. And also, no two philosophers agree on the implications, right? No two philosophers will agree on how you should be leading your life exactly. There will be different ideas, each one with his philosophy. If they shame timeless, because at the end of the day, these are logical arguments. Nobody is coming and saying, this is what the Creator said. Some of their discoveries are things that they can clearly prove. And there are other things that they can't completely prove, but there are enough indications to feel comfortable with. And there are other things, other axioms or laws that they presented that aren't even really substantiable. They can't even be comfortably accepted, and certainly they can't be proven. I just, in order to put this into a little more practical terms, let's talk in terms of science. In science, right? People often, and we'll deal soon, Bez Hashem, with that. The clashes between science and Yiddishkeit, so to speak. There are no clashes between science and Yiddishkeit. There are clashes between scientists and Yiddishkeit. There is nothing, no tangible, visible phenomenon existing that clashes with anything in the Torah. There are clashes between scientific theories, between the scientific community's beliefs and things in the Torah. Now that's a different story. So again, like we're saying here, there are three levels. There are things that can be proven. Things that can be proven in a laboratory. That you can watch it happen. The Torah will never conflict with something like that. There are other things that cannot be completely proven, but they provide a very strong indication, and the conclusion is almost automatic, but not completely proven. I'll just give an example of this. Someone will tell me, what do you mean? Aren't the age things, what's the age of the world, aren't these things that can be shown in a laboratory? Can't they test it? Well, we'll get to that soon. We'll address it a little bit more in detail soon. You have to actually go and analyze all the data, see if actually carbon dating and the other methods that they use are seamless, or perhaps they are built on premises. Meaning there's certainly a lot of real concrete science there. The question is the whole system 100% seamless or not, or is it based on premises? But for example, it has never been observed that things have developed over a million years. Just what? They came with the indications that the dating system's shown. They show these things to be a million years old. And therefore, that brings you, again, if you don't have a Torah, the Khuzari will say later that we might not blame them for reaching these conclusions. But you develop a dating system, you test it, you see that this rock is a million years old. Now, as we'll show in a minute, even without a Torah, that's not 100% so. 97 or 98% so. Okay, so 98% to 100% is logical enough to say it's close enough, we can accept it. That's what he means when he says there are things that are not 100% proven, but they're close enough to comfortably accept. Now, what do I mean when I say that the dating systems, even assuming that they are seamless, we'll get to that, don't really get you 100% there. I'll just make one simple point. This is not really our subject for tonight. I'm trying to actually illustrate what he's saying here. Adam HaRishon was created, how old was he? He was created as a mature person. If you were to test his body in a laboratory, whatever way you would, it would show him to be, I don't know, 25 years old, 30 years old. Hashem created him 30 years old. Therefore, the fact that a test would show that he's 30 years old does not 100% prove that he actually is. Maybe he came into existence with signs of age. Signs of age, yes. Sign of age is not necessarily a proof of age. Also, there can be other natural occurrences, natural disasters, that can cause signs of age. So let's say, for example, in order for a certain type of soil to be fertile, or to be able to produce, it has to have gone through 2 billion years of process in order to be able to start yielding. So therefore, the fact that it's yielding today shows that it must be 2 billion years old? Not necessarily. Maybe Hashem created it, a type of soil that takes 2 billion years to develop. He created it at a point when it's ready to develop. Which means that if you go and test it now, you will find a sign of 2 billion years of age. Okay, this is really parenthetical because this is not our subject for tonight. What?
I'm just thinking of, how we get off on this.
This is parenthetical, this is not our subject. The only thing I'm trying to do is explain what he's saying, that there are three levels in philosophy, or what we'll call science. There are the things that can be shown on the table 100%. There are three levels. I'm stressing it because I'm going to draw on it later. There are things that can be indicated enough for a logical person to reach conclusions, but you have to remember that they have not really been proven. And then there are things that are simply theories that have never been proven. These are the three things. Now, the reason I'm making a big deal out of this is because I'm going to want to draw on it later. That's why I'm elaborating on the shot here now. For example, the Big Bang. The Big Bang is not even in the level of dating. It's a complete theory. Right? It's a complete guess. Either yes or no. Right? Okay. But let's forget about that. Again, I wanted to stress this because I want to get back to it. But he's saying, whenever you're talking about the philosophers' understanding of the significance of this world, all of their conclusions about right and wrong, about the way the world works, about the way the world developed, etc., etc., it's all human logic. Some percentage of their arguments will be provable, some not. So whatever it is, what's he saying? Back to our subject, forget about what we discussed, back to our subject. What is he saying? He's saying that, you want me to tell you that we base our faith on the fact that we see Hashem created the world? That is not, no one was there. No one heard from Hashem at that time what Hashem wants. And therefore you cannot really develop a seamless, absolute religion with directives for life based on that. You can only base it on your human speculation and assumptions and deductions. So therefore, that's not what I said. I didn't say we believe in Hashem who created the world. We do. But you're asking me, what is the very essence of our faith? What's the basis of our faith? It's not the fact that Hashem created the world, because nobody saw that. How can you base a religion on that?
What are they translating faith? Emuna?
What's that?
What's the word for faith?
He didn't use the word faith here. Dust. So I'm Al Kuzari. So the king answers. Now, you're speaking a little better than you did initially. Meaning, the way you presented your faith was lousy. But when you're telling me that you didn't present your faith as we believe in the one who created the world for the reason you just explained, I hear that. Initially he responded to the Jew by saying, I knew that the Jews are just not worth the effort. Now he's saying, so you could make sense. Let's continue our discussion. I'm not kicking you out yet. I'm Al Kuzari. So the Kuzari says again, you're saying that I presented my faith in a lousy way. We believe in the God who took us out of Mitzrayim. And you still maintain that that's a stupid way to present the faith. Just you're saying that now you understand why I did not say that the basis of our faith is the creation of the world. So he says, You want to understand the basis of our faith? I explained to you why creation of the world can't be. Understand that what I said is, I told you that Yetzias Mitzrayim, Yetzias Mitzrayim is the proof of our faith. It's not just the essence of our faith, but it's the proof of our faith. Not only is it a proof, it's something, it's the reality of our faith. Yetzias Mitzrayim is the proof of the truth of our faith. Now at this point, this sounds strange to us, because, what do you mean? It's kind of like, we were talking about the other religions, we said, well, how do we know that Islam is the true religion? Because the Quran came from Shemayim, and they wouldn't have had it from Shemayim if it wasn't the true religion, right? But what's he saying now? We can prove that our faith is real because Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. What's he saying? So the Khazari says, as usual, you're a few steps ahead of me. Good. We're getting there. So therefore, the Chaver is saying, no, I want you to realize, when I talked about Yetzias Mitzrayim, I actually presented you with the basis, the logical proof of our faith. Oma Kuzari Beichuze, how does your story of Yetzias Mitzrayim prove your faith? Oma Chaver. So the Chaver says, if you give me, if you'll indulge me, allow me first to build up my case. I have to give you some prefaces. Then I'll be able to explain what I meant. Because I see that meanwhile I'm just tiring you and you're not taking me seriously. But I want to show you how everything I'm saying is seamless proof of our faith. Amar Kuzari. So the Kuzari king answers, Hakdeim Hakzamaisecho Veishmaim. Alright, go ahead. I'll listen. So, Amar Chover. So the Chover says, let me give you a mashal. Ilu hayu oimrim lecha. If people would tell you, Ki melech hoidu ish chesed, that the king of Hoidu is a very great and gracious king. Roi leroi memoi velosis kavad lishmoi. And it's appropriate to exalt him and to glorify him. Now people are telling you the king of India is a very, very great man, and we should all be glorifying him, we should all be serving him. And I'll prove it to you. Remember you met two Indians last week? Aren't they fine people? That shows you that their king is a very, very great man, and we should all be glorifying him. Would that require you to believe in the king, in the virtues of the king of India? Omar Kuzari. So the Kuzari says, the fact that I know decent Indians, good Indians, how would that require me to exalt and glorify their king? First of all, maybe they're good people because they're good people. Maybe that's just the atmosphere there. Maybe they don't have a king at all. The fact that there are good people doesn't prove that they have a king who's a very, very great king guiding them. Or maybe it is true that it's inspired by their king. Or maybe both are true. Maybe they have a king who's a good guy and he's guiding them. And they're also good people. But how would that require me to glorify their king? So now the Chaver responds, good, you're right. Now what would happen if you were to get a knock at your door and there is a person dressed in royal, not royal as in what a king wears, but the clothing of the royal court. Clothing of a royal court, you see that this is a person with a very high class uniform, and he has for you a letter which is addressed to you by the King of India, signed, sincerely yours, so and so, the King of India. And he brings along with that gifts that can only come from a royal home. Miksav mefusam shu meyita, with a script that can only be from the Indian king. Meaning these are things that have to be from royalty. These are things that normal people can't have. V'imay refui shem loyfa iso ischa michol yecha, v'shem lo iso lecha briyuscha, v'same amaves l'seinecha v'anilcham yecha. Now, along with that letter comes, the king of India writes to you as follows. He says, I'm sending you, I want to get to know you, I want you to get to know me, so therefore I'm telling you, first of all, here's powders. These are powders that are master powders. If you're sick, swallow some, it'll make you better. If you have a war, throw them at your enemies, it'll kill them. It'll do it all. Or in other words, if I'll put it into different terms, what he's telling him basically is, he gets a message from the king of India telling him, I want to get to know you, I like you. Now, he still might be doubting, maybe this guy is coming with this whole uniform, maybe he's an imposter, maybe he's dressed up like Mohammed, right? But he says, but listen, if you're ever in trouble, send me a message, I'll send my people off immediately to protect you. You're ever sick, I'll send my doctors to heal you. And that's what happens. The guy gets in trouble, he sends off a letter, immediately an army shows up ready to fight. He's sick, a team of doctors shows up ready to heal him. He starts sensing that he is dealing with a real king who's really got these capabilities, and now these are not just stories. He's actually had experience with this guy. Then would you feel obligated to respect him in some way? Omar Kuzari Kenu. Kuzari says, yes, this would already be the case. I get this letter signed by him, and he says, whenever you need my help, just send a message, it'll come. Anything that he did need arrived immediately. Needed an army, came. Doctors, came. Everything came. So, by a Safik Horishin Sami Meni Miesh Lancha Hidu Melechim Loit, he says, yes, my original Safik, my original uncertainty whether the king, the people of India actually have a king, would no longer be relevant. I would also believe that, yes, what he has to say is relevant to me. So now, the Chavar says, so now that you became a fan of this king of India, and someone comes and tells you, can you tell me about the king of India? What will be your response? Will you respond, well, you should see the way he runs his country? Or will you tell him, you should see what he did for me last month when I was sick? So Omar Kuzari, the Kuzari says, if I'm trying to get somebody else to get to know this king of India, I'll start with my personal experience. I'm not going to start by talking about the things that I haven't seen. By now I believe that he's a great king and he runs his country well. But that's not going to be the first thing I'm going to discuss. I'm not going to say you should see the way he runs his country. I never saw it either. What I can tell you is, I can tell you what I experienced. Once I say, look, I know that this guy is for real, because he bailed me out in this case, and he healed me in that case, etc., etc. I know he's for real. And therefore, I can also add, I can tell you, that I also know, from what I've heard, that he runs his country great, and he really guides his people well, etc., etc. But what's my basis? What's my starting point? My starting point are things that I experienced myself. So Omar Chover. So the Chover answers, Al derech hazeh hashivoisicho kasher shaltani. That was my answer to you originally. Now here again, I want to contrast this with the other religions for a minute, just in order to note what he's about to say. The masses of the other religions today do not trace back to their own experience. Do you know of anybody today who claims to be a descendant of Yashka, Ephishona, of the apostles, of anybody who saw him? None of them claim to be that. They are the ones who the apostles came, convinced people believed them. That spread. More people believe, more people believe. Many people were forced to believe, or at least forced to accept the faith and raise their children accordingly, so their children believed. And that's why today you have millions of Christians. Do those millions account for millions of people who actually experienced anything? Not at all. So you can't use the numbers of the other faiths to determine anything about their credibility. The numbers mean absolutely nothing. Think of the marshal like this. If you have a cord that's a meter thick, can hold up a bridge. Right? If you have a thread, it can't. Now what happens if I have a cord that all the way across is a meter thick, but at one end of it got frayed, and at one end of it, it's only a thread thick. But most of it is a meter thick. Can I hang a bridge on that? Almost the whole thing is a meter thick, but at the end, it's hanging on a thread. You can't. Obviously, you can't, right? The whole thing is hanging on a thread. It's not worth anything. So at the end of the day, yes, there are millions of people, but what are they based on? They're based on the fact that Paul came and said this and this. They don't have any more information than I do. So what is it based on? That's what the Chavar is leading up to here. He's saying our faith is not based on the fact that my great-great-grandfather was told by someone who threatened him that, yes, Yashka did this, so Muhammad did that. Our faith is based on our own experiences with Hashem, as in the entire nation. Now, there's still a jump from the fact that we heard that our ancestors experienced it 3,000 years ago to we know it as a fact for ourselves. We'll deal with that. But first we're starting with the beginning of how our faith developed. V'chein pasach Moshe l'dabar en paray. He said, when you're talking to a person, you have to begin with what you know personally. When you want to present a faith, you have to begin with what you know personally. So, when Moshe spoke to Paroi, note that he presented Hashem in the same way as I just presented him to you. How did Moshe present Hashem to Paroi? Did he say, the creator of the world sent me to you? Is that what he said? He said, the God of the Hebrews sent me to you. What on earth is that supposed to mean to Paroi? What he meant was, he's telling Paroi, the God of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov sent me to you. This meant more to Paroi than the creator of the world. Creator of the world spoke to you? How do you know? How do you know it's the creator of the world? Who knows who created the world? So he says, no. He came and told him, the God of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov spoke to me. Why? Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were in the recent past. And they were world famous. So remember that. They were world famous. All the nations knew about Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. All the nations of the world knew about Hashem's special providence over the others. And of all the nisim that he did for them, right? Mitzrayim knew it. Abraham had his stories in Mitzrayim. The people in the land of Canaan knew it. You see that they revered the others, right? The Bnei Ches said to Avraham Avinu, Nisi Eli Kimat Tobikir Beinu. Avimelech came to Yitzchak. You realize what we often don't have the immensity of it because we learned the parshias. We learned them when we were five and we stay with the same understanding. But do you know what that means? That a king is approaching a head of a household saying, I want to make a treaty with you. Right? It's like saying, the president of the United States wants to negotiate with the president of this shul to work together on something. Or just not to attack each other. A king is approaching Yitzchak Avinu, Avimelech, and he's telling him, I want to treat with you. I want to make a treaty with you. Kings didn't make treaties with heads of households. Yes, in their day, they were famous as Anshe Elohim. Everybody knew them as such. And this was not all that long later. This was not that long later. And yes, people knew about Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov and their God. And therefore, when Moshe is coming and telling Paroi, that God of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov spoke to me, he was talking about things that Paroi could relate to. He didn't say the God who controls Shemayim and the Oretz sent me to you. He also didn't tell him, I was sent by the one who created me and the one who created you. Remember the one who created you? He sent me. He didn't tell him any of that. He told him things that Pari would be able to relate to in a tangible way. And this approach was also followed when Hashem presented himself to the Jewish people. What did Hashem tell the Jewish people? Did he tell them, I'm the one who created the world? Anoichi Hashem Elokecha Asher Hoitzeisicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. I am the one who took you out of Mitzrayim. You saw that Hashem took you out of Mitzrayim and you just never met him. What happened at Har Sinai? The Jews were saying, Ritzaneinu Liritz Esmalkeinu. They saw Hashem's might. They saw everything Hashem was doing with them in Mitzrayim. And they were saying, we want to meet Hashem. Hashem came and introduced himself to them. He said, let me introduce myself to you. I am Hashem. That's what happened at Har Sinai. Which Hashem? The Hashem that you were talking about. The Hashem you were dying to see. The Hashem you experienced back in Mitzrayim. He didn't come and say, I'm the creator of the world, I'm your creator. Then he would have been introducing himself to them as a stranger, so to speak. He introduced himself to them as the one they already had experience with. And the one that they came so close to actually seeing, they just wanted to see it. The one who kept on leaving them messages and notes. Right? It's like you have an email correspondence with somebody for 3 weeks. And you also mail things back and forth. And you see his handwriting and everything. And then he comes and says, oh, hi, I'm so-and-so. It's something familiar. Right? That was how Hashem presented himself to the Jewish people. Not as the creator of the world. And, therefore, that's how I presented it to you when you asked me. When you asked me, al emunosi, you asked me about my faith. I answered you with the premise, with the basis of what I consider my obligation. How do I know that I am obligated to serve Hashem? I know because we were taken by Hashem out of Mitzrayim. There's nothing, there's no speculation here, there's no philosophy here. It's not about figuring out who must have created the world and what he must want. I'm coming and telling you, we met Hashem. You want to know about Hashem? I'm telling you about the Hashem that we met. Asher hisborer etzlam hamama dahu bir'is einehim. They saw this with their eyes. How did the Jewish faith begin? Because Hashem came to the entire Jewish people and told them, hi, I'm Hashem, and here's what I want. There was no believing anybody, right? There was no one person who came and said, Hashem spoke to me privately and I have a message for you. No. And Hashem wanted people to serve him. He appeared to them and said, hello, I am Hashem. That's what he did. And note that the Torah is full of that. The Torah says this is the basis for your obligation. What are the last words of the Torah? Right? Le'enei kol Yisrael. The Torah does not believe in this business of one person coming and saying, well, Hashem appeared to me, he didn't give me any way to prove it to you, but you're expected to accept it on faith. The Torah stresses time and time after again. In fact, the Torah says, and here's where we're going to run into a problem, and this is kind of prefacing what we're going to be talking about now. The Torah says, Ki loyes b'neichem. I forgot exactly the words of the pasuk. But the words approximately are Kileis b'neichem asher lo yiro'u v'lo yishamu. I'm not addressing your children who didn't see or hear any of these things. I just don't remember exactly where it is either. But I didn't want to read it inside. I didn't think I would get to it this week. Kileis b'neichem asher lo yiro'u v'lo yishamu. I'm not addressing your children who didn't actually see and hear all these things. The Torah is saying clearly, don't accept it on faith. Accept it based on the fact that you experienced. Now, where does that leave us? One minute. Not 1 minute. An hour. But we'll get there. But whatever it is, the Torah, the Jewish faith is meant to spread, and Hashem is coming and saying, I don't expect it to be otherwise. It is spread based on experience, based on the fact that you met Hashem, that you experienced Hashem. Now, where does that leave us? So the Khuzari answers that question in a way that is going to leave us a little disappointed until we really understand what he's saying. So they all saw that with their eyes. And since then, we have that continual tradition that for us is like seeing with our eyes.
Who says the Khuzari?
What? The Khuzari. The Chaver. This is the Chaver. No, this is the Chaver. Yeah. Now, this is a little bit deflating. So what he's saying is as follows. He's saying our faith is based, Hashem expects us to serve Him based on the fact that He introduced Himself to us, that we all saw it with our eyes, and as we'll see soon stressed, anybody who is not a part of this is not expected to participate. Unlike other religions that come and say every last person must accept this or will burn in hell forever, we say, you weren't there? Go back home. No one has any expectations of you. Hashem makes it clear. I expected of those who were there, who I met, who heard me. Those people have no excuse. That's what Hashem is saying. And that's what the Khuzari is saying. That is how I'm presenting our faith. That is how our faith began. Began with Hashem appearing to everybody together, not to an individual who's meant to convey His word. And now, we get into the question of, so what about us? We weren't there. In fact, the pasuk says, "Ki lo yez b'neichem asher lo ro'u ve'lo shamu." Right? I'm not addressing your children who didn't see and hear this. So what about us? So he answers, "No, it's like we were there and saw it because we have the tradition." Now, at first glance, the neshamas were there, but that's already a leap of faith. Did you experience it because your neshama was there? That again, any faith can do that. If you're going to base the faith on that, anyone can come and tell you, you know, believe in so and so because your soul is aware of it. No, it's not enough. Hashem wouldn't expect you to serve Him on that basis. Afterwards, we know that we were there. But again, it has to start with something absolutely tangible and irrefutable. That's how it has to start. So he tells us that continued tradition for us is like seeing it and being there. Why? See, again, we run into the same problem. Do the other nations have traditions also? So again, we already distinguished between our tradition and theirs. Their tradition, what does it lead up to? I get it from my father, got it from his father, got it from his father, got it from his father, who? Heard about it from somebody else. Ours, got it from his father, who was there. He's the one who got the revelation.